your tickets at the box office, please.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob Pollard greeting you from the foyer of our theater, which tonight is packed with an enthusiastic first-night audience streaming in to see this premiere performance. Just a few minutes to curtain time, so while we're waiting, let me tell you that every week we'll present your favorite stars of stage and radio. Every week, new personalities. Every week, a new story. And tonight, we bring you that outstanding actor of stage, screen, and radio, Mr. Peter Finch. Good evening, Peter.
Hello, Bob, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, first, let me tell you how very glad we are, Peter, to have you with us for tonight's premiere performance.
And I'm more than happy to be starring in this play, till the day I die.
Incidentally, I believe that this play originally was performed over a national American network on one of the top programs called Suspense.
That's correct, Bob. The American production starred Dane Clark, that excellent character actor who's making rapid strides in Hollywood.
Talking of films, I believe you've taken part in a number of Australian productions.
Yes, Bob, and I found a very interesting work. I think there's a great future in this country for films as well as the stage and radio. We have some very fine actors in Australia, and I think the standard of work is continually improving.
Well, thanks for those words, Peter. Now, while you're preparing for the first act curtain, let's set the scene of tonight's play, Till the Day I Die. Picture an ordinary hotel room. The breeze comes gently through a window, flapping at the blind. Below in the street, the traffic passes noisily by, unheeded by the young man who sits by the window, looking fixedly toward the sky. He stubs his cigarette into an already crammed ashtray. His gaunt face is drawn, his mind reeling with a thousand confused thoughts.
I'd practically worn a track on the linoleum. I just used up my last cigarette. I was as jumpy as a two-year-old at a barrier trial. Partly it was because you always feel that way after a job. And partly it was the idea of staying cooped up in that three-hole when I had enough money now to buy a good-sized hotel. But mostly it was Pat. She and I were washed up, even if she didn't know it. And when you're washed up with a woman, almost anything they say will get on your nerves. But when it's the kind of nagging she was doing, it's enough to qualify you for a canvas corset.
It's the future I'm worried about, Frankie.
What's the matter with the future? Doesn't look like you'll ever be on the dole.
I don't mean that. I mean our future, yours and mine.
Well, stop worrying about it.
Well, I can't. You didn't have to do it, Frankie.
What do you mean I didn't have to do it? We're walking out of the place with that bag crammed full of notes, and all of a sudden that fellow steps around a corner and throws a light in my face.
But you didn't have to kill him.
No. I suppose I should have given him his taxi fare to police headquarters. Don't you understand? He'd have given our description to the police. And a good description is all those cops need. Because sooner or later, sweetheart, they'll get you.
I can't understand it, Frankie. I just never imagined you'd ever do a thing like that.
Oh, will you stop it? You've been going on about these jobs with me for over a year now. You know what the score is? What do you think we carry a gun for? Looks?
But this is different, Frankie. This is murder.
All right, it's murder. And the only difference between murder and what you've been doing is that they give you the lot for murder, while armed robbery gets you only 10 to 20.
Doesn't it even bother you?
Why should it? Fella, I don't know the first thing about a fella that had the tough luck to be working late in a place we decided to crack. Fella whose face I didn't see. Why, I don't even know what he looked like now.
He was a man, though, Frankie. A human being.
What of it? Men are getting killed every day. Fellas, you don't know anything about. Only what you read in the papers. And do you worry about it? You don't.
I don't like it, Frankie. I don't like any part of it.
But you like that money stowed away in the suitcase over there. You like that all right, don't you?
I'm not so sure, Frankie.
Ah, you're not so sure.
Because I'm in it just as much as you. Perhaps you haven't got a conscience, but I have. A man was murdered and it was partly my fault. You can't just brush off a thing like that, Frankie.
Up.
Sooner or later it'll begin to catch up with you.
I said shut up. I'm sorry I hit you, honey. I'm a little nervous. Try and pull yourself together, will you? Anyway, it's time to go out and get the papers. Run down for them like a good girl, huh?
All right.
And see if you can get me some cigarettes.
All right, Frank.
And stop worrying. Nothing's going to happen.
I can't help it, Frank.
Look, Pat.
Yes?
I don't like you to worry. Because you might get ideas, you understand?
What sort of ideas do you mean?
Ideas about saying something to somebody.
Oh, Frankie.
And you know what would happen if you did get any ideas like that?
You needn't worry. Because I do know. Now.
I went over to the window and watched her go down the steps to the street. And then start for the corner. I knew I didn't have to worry about anything yet, but having somebody around who can turn you in for murder any time they want isn't such a healthy feeling. It seemed as though it was only a few seconds before I had Pat running up the stairs.
Hurry, Frankie, open the door.
All right, all right. You don't have to. What's the matter, somebody after you?
No, but look, the paper.
Let's see. Front page, eh? Pear Loot Brokerage Office.
No, the picture.
What about the picture? It's me. It's me. Now, look here. There's only one place in the world they could have got a picture of me.
No, Frankie, don't you. You're hurting me. Look what it says.
What about it?
Look at it.
Philip Abel, accountant, killed. But it couldn't be. It couldn't be.
It is, though, Frankie. It's the man you killed.
But it couldn't be, I tell you. It's me. It's exactly like me, even to the way his hair is parted. It must be some kind of a mistake.
You know it isn't, Frankie. How could it be?
I don't know.
I haven't got any pictures of you. You told me you'd never had any taken. You said you'd been smart. You hadn't let them take your pictures since you were a kid.
Yeah, that's right. I never did. But it's almost exactly like me. I couldn't tell the difference myself.
It's just one of those freak things. A fellow you didn't know or care about. The fellow who wasn't going to bother your conscience one little bit. The fellow you killed. Turns out to be your double.
Yeah.
It's rather like killing yourself.
Will you shut up?
I told you it's not so easy to kill a man without...
Here, give me that paper.
What are you trying to do?
I'm tearing that picture up. And now I'm burning it. And now it's over with and it's forgotten, you understand? It's nothing but a little pile of ashes. And I never heard of that fellow. I don't know the first thing about him. I don't even remember his name.
Well, I do. It was...
Shut up. I don't want to know it, ever. Well, that was the way things stood. I won't say it didn't get under my skin, because it did. To shoot someone and then to see his picture in the paper the next day. And it's a picture of yourself, feature for feature, the spitting image. I suppose it would do things to anybody. But it was just as Pat had said, just one of those freak things, so... What was the use of worrying about it? What was worrying me more at the moment was that somebody must have seen us making our getaway, because the police knew it was a man and a woman who pulled off that job. And that wasn't healthy. It meant we were just so much easier to pick up. It meant that all that money in the suitcase under the bed, we had still had to stay cooped up in that run-down boarding house day after day, waiting for things to quieten down. Finally, I couldn't stand it any longer.
But, Frankie, I thought you said...
I know what I said. That I'm going crazy in this place. I've got to get out.
All right.
It'll mean we'll have to separate for a while.
Separate?
Now, keep your shirt on. We can't hang around here, so one of us has to go south and the other one goes north. You take your share of the money.
I don't want any share.
Are you still harping on that? That I killed a man?
I just don't want the money.
All right, then. It'll take enough to last you for a while, because you're getting out of town, you understand?
All right, thank you. But I have enough money.
Okay, have it your own way. You'll go to the Allerton Hotel in Ashton City. You know the place. You wait for me there.
How long, Frankie?
A month, 2 months. How do I know? Till this business blows over. But I'll get in touch with you. And then when everything's quietened down, we'll meet somewhere quiet and make for the West. We'll be able to live off the fat of the land.
Frankie.
Yeah?
You won't forget, will you, Frankie? Because if you're going to, I'd rather know it now.
Forget you, honey? When you're the one person in the world who can send me up for murder? Don't you worry, honey. I won't forget you. I walked with Pat to a taxi rank a couple of blocks from where the room was and said goodbye to her there. And then I went into a department store and bought a couple of shirts, shoes, and the rest of the trimmings and stuffed everything into a brand new bag and hopped in a bus that would take me to Central Station. I wasn't doing anything or thinking anything. I was just sitting there in the bus on a seat all by myself looking out of the window. A few seats away, a kid was yelling out,
"Daddy! Daddy!"
I didn't pay much attention to it. I thought the kid was just calling to his dad to come and sit down or something. I kept on looking out of the window. Then all of a sudden, I felt a tug at my sleeve, and the kid was there, yelling at me.
"Daddy! Oh, Mommy, come quickly! I found Daddy!"
I turned around quickly. And kneeling there beside me on the seat was a blonde, curly-haired kid about 4 or 5 years old. I don't know much about kids' ages. But he was looking up at me with the widest blue eyes I'd ever seen. And the biggest smile. Yet there was big tears running down his cheek. I don't care much for kids, but it was something about this particular kid that was different.
"Daddy! Daddy! It's Daddy, Mommy!"
Now, just a second, Sonny. I'm afraid...
"Daddy! Teddy, what do you mean by jumping on that seat and shouting at the gentleman?"
I let my eyes come up a little and I saw her. She was standing there just like I'd seen her a million times, with that long, blonde hair, those big, expressive eyes. Yes, I'd seen her before, but always with my eyes closed. This was the first time I'd ever seen her with my eyes open. Is that so crazy? Haven't you got some kind of person in your mind that you've always dreamed about? Or perhaps you're lucky. Perhaps you've met that person with your eyes open. Like I was doing right now.
"It's Daddy, Mommy. It's my Daddy."
"Teddy, I'm awfully sorry, sir, but..." Oh.
Her eyes fastened on my face. Wide and full of an expression I didn't understand. I wondered for a split second if the same feeling had hit her that had hit me when I first saw her. And then she became very pale and began to sway. Everyone in the bus turned their eyes our way and began chattering like a lot of monkeys. I jumped up and I grabbed her.
I'm all right.
"But you're not. You better sit down here."
"Thank you. Perhaps I will."
"Sit here, Mummy. I'll move over."
"Oh, that's this gentleman's seat, Teddy."
"Oh, that's all right, Sonny. You stay where you are. There's plenty of room for the three of us."
"All right. If you insist."
"I do insist."
It is Daddy, isn't it, Mummy?"
"No, darling. I'm afraid it isn't. I'm so sorry. You must think we're both a little insane."
"No. You look for a minute there as if you saw a ghost."
"I'm afraid for a moment I thought you were a ghost."
"Me? A ghost?"
"Yes. I know it sounds perfectly ridiculous, but for a moment there I thought you were my husband."
"Oh. Now I understand why your little boy called me Daddy."
"Yes. Almost uncanny. But he was the image of you. The very image."
"The image of me?"
"Yes. Only, you see, he's dead."
"Oh."
"Teddy hasn't quite become used to the idea yet. That's why he mistook you for his daddy. Philip was killed only about a week ago."
"About a week ago?"
"Yes. Perhaps you read about it in the newspapers. Philip Abel. Killed by a hoodlum who was robbing the brokerage office where he worked."
The curtain falls on Act One of tonight's premier performance, Till the Day I Die, starring Peter Finch. In a moment, Mr. Finch will return for Act Two. And now, Act Two of Till the Day I Die, starring Peter Finch.
There was a terrible knot inside my stomach as I looked up at that girl. I tried to speak, but the words got lost somewhere in my throat. I looked down at the kid with the blonde, curly hair, the nicest kid I'd ever seen in my life. And I was the rat that had killed his father. And I kept thinking, this kid is what my kid would have looked like. And I had to get a grip on myself. It was a coincidence, just a coincidence. I happened to get on the same bus with the wife of the fellow I'd shot. How was I supposed to know he had a beautiful wife and a curly-haired kid when I shot him? To me, he was just someone who stood in my way. As I said, it was a coincidence. And anyway, I was getting off the bus at the end of the line, catching the train for up north, and that would be that. They rode almost as far as Central Station, and we sat there and talked about a lot of different things. It wasn't hard to talk to her so much. And that kid. And then finally they were getting up to leave, and then the kid reached up and did something no kid had ever done to me before. He kissed me.
When you come back here, Mr. Kane, I'd like you to come out and see us.
Yes?
We live at Elmswood, 27 Thompson Street. You can't miss it. Catch the bus at this intersection.
I remember that.
Goodbye, Mr. Daddy.
Goodbye, son. I bought my ticket, single fare, and got aboard the train. The porter showed it to me to my seat, but I couldn't get myself to sit down in it. I went out and stood on the platform. I stood there a long time. I tried not to think about her. I tried not to remember her face and the kid's face with all those tears, but it wasn't any good. They were everything I wanted in my life. A home and a kid and the right girl. Girl. Why not? If she'd married Abel, she'd marry me, wouldn't she? Wasn't I the very image of him? Didn't she say that herself? Didn't the kid even call me Daddy? Why not?
Aboard! Aboard!
Porter, Porter.
Yes, sir?
Get my bag.
But we're getting ready
get
to...
Get my bag off this train.
Yes, sir.
Why... Mr. Kane.
Hello.
It's Mr. Daddy.
Hello, Teddy.
Hello, Mr. Daddy.
Why, I thought you'd be on the train by this time.
Oh, there was a message waiting for me when I got to the station. It told me that the business deal I was going to had been called off, so there wasn't any need for me to go. And then I remembered your invitation.
Well, I certainly never expected it to be filled so soon.
Oh, if it's too soon, I'll go.
Oh, don't be silly. Come in, please.
Gee, I'm glad you're really home, Mr. Daddy.
I went into the house. It was everything I knew it would be. Neat, well-furnished, nothing overdone. Just a real solid home. We went into the living room, and there in a big silver frame on the baby grand piano was the same picture that had appeared in the newspaper. The picture of him.
That's Philip. He does look like you, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, quite a lot.
You can hardly blame Teddy very much, can you? Or me?
No, I suppose I can't. After those first few uneasy moments, I suppose you could say we got on like a house on fire. I became a regular visitor. She and Teddy called me Frank. And I called her Barbara. I had dinner with her a couple of times a week, and we went to pictures, shows, even a couple of night spots together. Did I feel funny about moving in on the wife and the kid of the man I'd killed? Why should I? Philip Abel was still a total stranger to me, wasn't he? Whenever she brought up the subject, I just avoided it. And she wasn't bringing it up so often. From now on, it was just a matter of time. Except for one thing, one little thing. So about 2 months after I met her, I told her I was going away on business.
Where, Frank? Do you have to go far?
Just to Ashton City, that's all.
Ashton City? That's not far.
No. And Barbara?
Yes?
When I come back, there's something I'd like to ask you.
ask me?
Yes, a question.
What kind of a question, Frank?
Oh, something about you and Teddy and me.
Oh. Well, will you be gone long?
No. What I've got to do in Ashton City won't take long. I knew the Allerton Hotel in Ashton City like I knew the inside of my hat. I knew how to get inside without being seen, and how to get out without being seen. So I just went on up to her room.
Who is it?
Just an old friend.
Frankie!
Hello, honey.
Oh, Frankie.
Here, break it down, honey. Aren't you going to let me in?
Oh, of course. Come on in. Oh, Frankie, I thought perhaps you would...
But I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Oh, gee, you look great. Relaxed, happy.
Yes, I am happy. What have you been doing with yourself, Pat?
Oh, just waiting.
Well, I suppose we'd better get it over with.
Get what over with?
I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you, Pat.
Bad news?
Yeah. I'm going to have to kill you.
Kill me? But why? What have I done?
Nothing yet.
Then...
I met a girl.
All right, take her.
But this is different. She's the wife. Was the wife of a fellow named Philip Abel.
Philip Abel? That's the man you killed.
You see, Pat, that's the trouble. You've got too good a memory.
But I wouldn't talk, Frankie. You know I wouldn't talk.
That's a chance I can't take, Pat. Because from now on, I'm not taking any chances. From now on, I'm going to be happy.
Happy? How could a thing like you be happy? A cold-blooded butcher like you. You think all you have to do is to spill enough blood around and you'll get what you want. You'll be happy. Happy. Try and be happy. With all the blood you've got in your hands, you'll never be happy until the day you die.
Finished?
Yes. Go ahead. Kill me. Kill me. Oh.
I arrived back in town that same night. But I didn't go around to see Barbara until the next day. I called and she asked me over to dinner. Afterwards, I helped her to put the kid to bed and he kissed me goodnight. And I sat down with her on the couch in the front room.
Well, Frank?
It's about that question that I told you I was going to ask you when I came back.
What is the question, Frank?
Barbara, will you marry me?
Oh.
Is it all you've got to say?
No. No, it isn't, but...
But what?
Well, I've got to have a little time to think about it, Frank.
Think about it?
Yes.
But you must have known that I was going to ask you.
Yes, I suppose I did, but... It's still a pretty serious question to answer just like that, Frank.
Is it that you don't love me enough to marry me, is that it?
It's not just a question of myself, Frank.
What is it, then?
It's Teddy.
Teddy? Why, he and I are great pals.
I know, but things are easy, simple for a child. I'm the one who has to think about his future.
I can take care of his future.
I know you can, financially. I believe that. But...
Well, what other way is there?
That's what I sometimes wonder if you know, Frank. You see, you're a little different from other men I've known. You're from a rougher mold, a little harder.
That can be changed.
Yes, I think it can. But I want to be sure first, Frank. I want to be sure that Teddy's father, his second father, is not only just a successful man, but that he's a good man.
Like his first father?
Yes.
And what did he have that I don't have?
Since you ask, he had a lot of struggle in his life.
Struggle?
He was a successful public accountant when he died. But it hadn't been easy for him. He'd had to work and struggle for it. He was an orphan. He'd been adopted, you see. His real name was Regan.
Regan?
Yes. His real parents were killed in an accident when he was less than Teddy's age. They lived on a farm.
Outside a town called Moncton.
Yes, do you know the place? And then he was adopted by a family called Abel. He didn't even remember it himself. He was too small. But they told him. Frank. Frank, where are you going? Frank!
Frank!
started walking. I tried to put it out of my mind, like I had everything else. But it was no good. It grew and grew until my head was bursting with it. Until it was the only thing in the whole world, the thing that she'd told me. And so when I got back to my room, I knew what I was going to have to do. And I sat down to write this. To tell her. Before I do it. It wasn't just what I'd done. It wasn't realizing that a man with another man's blood on his hands can't be a fit husband to that man's wife. It was what she had told me. A kid named Regan. A farm outside of Moncton. And I remembered. I knew now why I looked like Philip Abel. Because I had been a kid named Regan, living on a farm outside of Moncton. I had been adopted by a family named Kane. And I'd grown up in boys' homes mostly. And lived to shoot and kill a man named Philip Abel, who was my twin. Who was my own blood brother. The gun is by my hand. Pat said I'd never be happy till the day I died. And she was kind of right.
The final curtain falls on Till the Day I Die. In a moment, I'll return a list for you tonight's cast. Tonight's play, Till the Day I Die, was written by William Spear, was directed by Reg Johnston, with the following cast: Teddy, Nicky Yardley; Barbara, Irene Hopper; Pat, Lyndall Barber. While as Frank Kane, you heard our star, Peter Finch. Thanks a lot, Peter. As Frank Kane, you deserve the fate which overtook you.
I certainly did.
But as Peter Finch, the actor, well, I think you deserve congratulations for a very fine performance.
Well, since we're tossing compliments around, I'd like to say tonight's show has been great fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing you all again shortly.
Well, we'll be most certainly looking forward to your next visit, Peter. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, next week, same time, same station, there'll be another new original radio play presented by outstanding personalities. Be sure to listen. This is a Grace Gibson radio production.